Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Our first question today, contraception and what else? And why does the Obama health reform law mandate a list at all of what has to be in every health insurance policy? Usha Ranji, Associate Director for Women's Health Policy at the Kaiser Family Foundation, which studies and advocates around health care, is here with some answers. Usha, thank you so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And listeners, we're going to put the question out there for you. From the conversation we've been having the last few days, we will expand it from should the government force religious institutions to cover contraception in their employee health care plans to should the federal government have such a list at all? And if so, what do you think should be on it? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Usha, the contraception coverage for employees of religious institutions has been the headline debate. But I think it's made people realize that, oh, there is some kind of list that comes with Obama health reform of things that every new private plan must include. That is correct, right?
There is such a list. Right. So, yes, the contraception is one service, but the broader context is that the health reform law that was passed in 2010 requires new private plans to cover a pretty wide range of preventive services. And these are services that researchers and scientists and clinicians have studied and deemed to be effective and have an evidence base. And it's a pretty wide range, and contraception is just one of them.
And is it all preventive care, as birth control is considered to be?
So these are all services that are meant to that are on the sort of in the prevention field. So we have screenings for cancer, breast cancer, cervical cancer, as well as a wide range of screenings and counseling on chronic conditions. So this includes services like screening for obesity, which research has shown contributes to a wide range of chronic conditions. There's screening for mental health. There's also all the vaccines that have been recommended by the federal agency on immunization practices are now going to be covered in private health plans.
And I'm looking at your website, and it lists four broad categories where the Obama law has mandates for what needs to be included in health insurance plans. And these are all prevention-based, and they're listed as evidence-based screenings and counseling, routine immunizations, childhood preventive services, and preventive services for women. So as you were saying, these include all kinds of things from screening for diabetes, cholesterol, obesity, various cancers, depression, HIV, counseling for drug and tobacco use, healthy eating, and other common health concerns, and then the common immunizations, including the flu vaccine, meningitis, tetanus, HPV, et cetera, et cetera. And then a range of women's preventive services without cost sharing, which includes the contraception that's been in the news and well woman visits and a bunch of other things. Is the Obama law the first time such a list is being put into federal law?
Well, into federal law, this is the first time that we've seen this sort of comprehensive list, yes. At the state level, several states have required health insurance plans to cover a variety of services, including contraception. Right now, 28 states require coverage of contraception in private health plans. A lot of them also have exemptions, which is where a lot of the attention has been focused over the past couple of weeks. But similarly, several states do require plans to cover immunizations. There's a wide range of services that have been included. I think the other thing at the federal level that's important to know is in terms of services, there is required coverage in employer-based plans for maternity care, as well as recently a mental health parity law was passed. But this extensive of a list, this is the first time we've seen it at the federal level.
And what's the purpose? Critics say the market should take care of what's in a health insurance plan, even if the government mandates that everyone buy or provide insurance.
Well, the idea behind this really was to encourage broader use and access to preventive services. So these are all services, like I said, that have an evidence base and that various committees of researchers and scientists have studied and deemed to be effective in prevention and early detection of disease. And so by requiring coverage, and I think it's also important to remember, removing the cost sharing, that is, as an individual, if you are in a plan that covers these services, you no longer have to pay any out-of-pocket costs for them. The idea was that that removes any type of financial barrier to the individual and encourages someone to go ahead and make use of these services.
I'm glad you brought up the cost sharing because I hadn't mentioned it before. And this has been one of the controversies around the president's language. It was for using the word free, as in women will get free contraception coverage from their health insurer, even though their religious employer doesn't have to provide it. And your site, and I think the law itself, uses slightly different language. Instead of saying free, it says with no patient cost sharing, defined as no out-of-pocket deductibles for deductibles or copays for these preventive services if you get them in plan and if that's why you go for an office visit. So how different are free and no patient cost sharing, no deductibles and copays, if they're different at all?
Well, I think, again, it sort of depends on the perspective. The idea is behind the law was to, again, to remove the any sort of out-of-pocket cost to the individual. Now, a lot of people have debated whether or not the idea of free, and some people say everything has a cost. Some people say the idea, the advocates of this say that this will help prevent disease, it will help detect diseases earlier, and therefore will lead to cost savings later on. But the premise behind the law was really to remove the individual cost, any individual cost barrier.
And, of course, the insurance industry doesn't like mandates. Nobody likes mandates unless they're on other people. And it argues that this makes insurance cost more for everyone. So if more people were allowed to buy more bare-bones insurance plans, then the insurance companies wouldn't have to cover as many things for as many people, and premiums would therefore go down for all. That's their argument. Does Kaiser agree with that? Do you agree with that?
Well, Kaiser, the Kaiser Family Foundation, as you know, is a nonpartisan organization and doesn't take, does not involve in advocacy. But I think what's important to remember is that, the research, again, there's a lot of debate about this. Some people really argue that, again, preventing diseases, wider use of preventive services, wider access to preventive services would eventually save insurance companies and save the whole healthcare system costs down the road. For example, one of the studies that that has been cited widely in the past couple of weeks is that when birth control coverage was added to the federal employee health plan, which it is included there, that premiums actually did not go up because it is a relatively low cost compared to preventing caring for unintended pregnancies.
In fact, perhaps if the health insurance companies were really honest, plans that included contraception coverage would actually be cheaper than those that don't, because contraception is much cheaper to cover than the cost of unwanted pregnancy and delivery care or the HIV care or the abortions that are being prevented by the additional use of contraception.
Right. There's been a lot of talk about it. There's been some research that has looked at this about whether, what is the impact of contraceptives. And in both public and private plans, there has been research that has suggested that contraception really does save money.
And does it work with other kinds of things, too? That I noticed on your website, for example, it says, and let me find this. It says, research shows some evidence-based preventive care can save many lives, of course, and that some is cost-effective. So what does that mean, some is cost-effective? In theory, all preventive care would be cost-effective. So if you get if more people are getting colonoscopies, which cost something, a lot fewer people are going to get colon cancer, which costs a lot more.
Right. So there is, and again, the cost-effectiveness research continues and is, I think what, you know, there's a lot of sides to this. There is the prevention side. There is also the fact that when you remove cost barriers, then more people could be using the service, and so that could raise costs. And so there's also the idea, you know, this sort of difference between short-term and long-term costs. One of the areas that people are really looking into it, this a lot is obesity. The research suggests that obesity is responsible for a wide range of chronic diseases. And so one of the estimates out of the federal government suggested that obesity prevention services could decrease premiums in the long term by, you know, a small fraction, but because it might, if it were to help reduce the rate of obesity amongst its enrollees, that could lead to savings on a wide range of illnesses, such as cardiovascular, diabetes, et cetera.
Usharanji from the Kaiser Family Foundation, my guest on WNYC. As we look at this contraception and religious employer coverage debate in broader context, in the context of the long list of preventive care items that all private insurance plans must now include under the Obama Health Reform Law. And listeners, we want to know what you think should or shouldn't be on such a list, and should there be one at all that's mandated by Washington. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Pedro in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pedro.
Hey there. So my comment is that a mandatory health plan such as Obama's doesn't make any sense unless there are specific requirements or minimum requirements for those plans. I mean, otherwise, what's the point of mandating coverage? So whether or not contraception or whatever should be on the list, which, of course, it should be, in my opinion, there has to be some kind of list out there. And I think the idea that insurance companies are saying it will cost too much is based on short-term and or faulty reasoning, because, you know, as we all know, just because something like a colonoscopy is covered doesn't mean that everyone's going to go out and get one, you know, just because that's human nature. So I think there has to be a list.
There has to be a list. Now, market people, Pedro, would say, well, consumers will demand the things that they feel they need in their health insurance coverage and therefore pay more or pay less if it was left up to the market. So if you're a 55-year-old woman, maybe you don't need contraception care in your coverage. And so that premium might be a little bit less than with somebody who needs, you know, the kind of coverage that a woman of childbearing age would need. Or you could take other kinds of examples.
Well, the thing is that everything, yes, I mean, individuals have different needs, but at a certain point, you have to have some minimum list of requirements. And again, it could be up for debate what those requirements are. You know, if you say, okay, look, 30% of the population does not need contraception because they're not sexually active or whatever, or, you know, X percentage doesn't need child obesity screening because they don't have children. I mean, that's certainly up for debate, but the idea of having minimum requirements that benefit the majority of the population and also benefit us all in their long-term cost savings, mm-hmm. you know, in the health system, I think it's just ridiculous to say that you would have to have coverage without specifying what that coverage is.
Otherwise, Pedro, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And I think we're going to get an opposing view here from Tim in Queens. Tim, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. I think we have, my comment is this, we have two arguments here. We have the economic and we have the moral. On the economic issue, you can't really make a or point to any valid study that contraceptives will reduce health care costs in the long run. There's no study out there at all.
I don't want to get bogged down into the debate that we and everybody else have been having for a week about contraceptive care and in particular. Certainly people will argue with what you just said, but I don't want to get into that argument again. Are you calling to make a point about what, other than contraception, should or shouldn't be in a basic insurance plan as mandated by the government?
Well, first of all, I have a problem with mandates, but I thought the purpose of Obamacare was to protect people from catastrophic illnesses. now we're starting on the slippery slope that, okay, we start with contraceptives, and now we're talking about childhood obesity. Where does it stop? I mean, is it going to stop when people get to a certain age that you're not going to offer them health care?
So people, well, of course, everybody is covered under Medicare when they get past a certain age. But what about childhood obesity? Look, the moral objections to contraception and anything in the sexual reproductive care area aside, with the things that you've been hearing on the list, is there anything else there that you would object to? The things that we were listing before, diabetes screening, cholesterol, you mentioned childhood obesity, you're raising a question about that. People would say, well, that is the kind of thing that would prevent catastrophic care.
Yeah, but where does it stop? We have a central government dictating to companies and people what's best for them. You're taking the individual responsibility away from people and dictating to them, well, you're going to have an obesity test every year for your children, or you're going to have a diabetic test.
Well, they're not telling them they have to. They're telling them that they can, and they'll get it without copay.
Well, I mean, it's the copay is going to be, the cost is going to be borne by society. Having the central government dictate to individuals and to health insurance carriers what is and what, you know, what they should be doing, I think we're starting down the wrong, the slippery slope to losing individual freedom.
Tim, thank you very much. And there,
Usha
Ranji from the Kaiser Family Foundation are two callers. Pedro in Brooklyn, Tim in Queens, really are the two poles of this argument. And this is what I guess the policymakers have to sit in Washington and, you know, decide where they're going to come down between. Tim's concern about individual freedom and government telling everybody what to do and the slippery slope and society bearing all the costs. And the idea of unless you put all these basic things on a list, they're not actually going to be available.
Right. And I think you're right. I think those really cover two wide ends of the spectrum. You know, Pedro's point was really about sort of this question of what is insurance, that there has to be some minimum level of benefits and requirements in order for a policy to be comprehensive. And so these set of preventive services that we've been talking about today, I should mention, also work in concert with another term from the law, which is essential health benefits. In the law, they created, named 10 categories of health services that private health plans will have to cover. And the specifics within that have not been detailed, but they're pretty broad coverage. So hospitalization, ambulatory, outpatient care, maternity care. There are these 10 categories saying that private health plans are going to have to cover services within this range, and the details are being worked out. That's in addition to these specific preventive services. And speaking to Tim's point, I think you raised a good point. It's really important to remember the law requires coverage of these services. It does not say anything about actual use of services. That's something that an individual would decide and would decide with a healthcare provider.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation, and I think really important for people to understand that whole contraception debate in context. This is part of what's coming with the Obama health law, assuming it remains in effect. And this is a step on the road to comprehensive health insurance for all Americans, as President Obama and the Democratic majorities in Congress when the law was passed envisioned it. Before you go, just one other question. Have you looked at other countries with universal health care coverage, health insurance plans? Do they do it this way?
I don't know the details of exactly how they cover it because their structures are so different, because their financing is so different. The issues are in terms of how they set up their actual benefits is, again, also mm-hmm. not exactly comparable.
All right. Usha Ranji from the Kaiser Family Foundation, which studies healthcare in America. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, listeners, if you want to feel good about our economy, but also get scared about what it might become, wait till you hear the latest from Greece in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.